to know better than to waste time arguing with the flame-haired Christie when she used that tone of voice. With JB in the lead, they vanished into the Stygian blackness. Christie held the silvered P7A-13 Heckler & Koch in her frozen right hand, feeling all the better for the 13 fresh rounds of 9mm ammo in the mag. She knew that the others would be reloading their own weapons, preparing for the charging pursuit that would inevitably come from the enraged Scalies. Christie had enough confidence in Ryan to believe that he'd come out of the tunnel ahead of any chasing muties. She flattened herself against the wall of rock, pistol in hand, waiting. Something was nagging at her seeing sense, but too much of her mind was devoted to the immediate present. Still, a small part of her brain was whispering danger. Amplified by the acoustically perfect shape of the tunnel, dreadful sounds squeezed past the half-closed sectors. Christie put her head to one side, straining to hear what was going on, imagining that she could hear the clattering of Ryan's steel-tipped combat boots, striking sparks off the stones of the wide corridor.
Gaia, help him.
Ryan realized how vulnerable they'd all be if a concerted attack from the Scalies should hit them out in the open, on the crumbling, slippery jetty. Against his better judgment, he stopped halfway to the steel doors, reaching for the spare caseless rounds for his assault rifle. He gestured for the boy to stand still and wait for him while he reloaded. Dean hesitated, looking back toward the swelling babble of noise and raw menace, then ahead into the unknowable darkness. Ryan bent over the blaster.
There's friends outside, Dean. Best you go ahead and join them.
No! I want to stay here! With you! Here!
When we're out of this, we'll talk about doing like you're told. Can't argue now.
Even as he readied the G-12 for action, a part of Ryan's mind strayed to the 10-year-old boy at his side. The son that he'd never been aware existed, had only known about for a couple of days, had only met 90 seconds ago.
You chilled all those Scalies. Rona said you were the meanest son of a bitch killer she ever saw in her life.
Ryan could hear stealthy footsteps advancing toward them from the main area of the Scalies' base.
Dean, keep your mouth shut tight and do exactly what I say.
Sure.
In the gloom, Ryan caught a flicker of light from the boy's deep-set eyes and a nod of his curly head.
Pass that door. Go on. I'm with you.
Both of them backed away, around the gentle curve of the passage, reaching the sex steel exit and edging through it. Ryan considered the possibility of trying to lock it or wedge it against their pursuers.
Whoa!
A brace of feathered arrows sunk into the other side of the door as he hesitated, which made his mind up.
Ah, shit.
He took the boy's skinny arm and heaved him across the open space, passing the bodies of the butchered sentries out into the freezing air. Christie had her finger on the trigger. The noise of the water breaking on the beach was loud, making it hard to hear whether anyone was coming out, and the darkness had become almost total. She sensed movement behind her, between the tumbled rocks of the old wharf and the Hudson. She whirled, her right wrist braced in her left hand, ready to fire.
What?
Whatever had caught her eye was gone, or had never been there in the first place, or had been a length of sodden driftwood floating sullen and partly submerged in the shallows. As she turned back, a figure emerged from the mouth of the tunnel. Two figures.
Ryan?
Yeah. Got...
The boy?
Yeah. Got Dean.
Scaly's coming?
Reach the sector. Where's the others? Everyone make it?
Yeah, out toward the wag. Cover if we need it.
The snow was beginning to come down with a real vengeance, masking everything, dropping visibility to a couple of yards. Ryan looked around, suddenly shuddering, realizing how much the past 40 minutes or so had taken out of him. The tension of entering the strange, dreamlike headquarters of the Scalies, picking his way between the sleeping muties and their chained prisoners, and the startling appearance of his lost son, and the brief, bloody brawl. There were a million questions that brimmed in Ryan's brain, questions about Sharona Carson, Dean's mother, about the whole 10 years of the boy's life, and smaller questions, like how come the boy hadn't been chained. If he had been, then Ryan would already be cooling meat inside the cloistered caverns.
Let's go.
Where?
Dean was staring out into the blackness, blurred by the whirling blizzard.
You got a boat out there?
Yeah, come on.
Christie led the way toward the jetty, picking cautious steps across the slippery, icy pebbles. Dean followed her, with Ryan bringing up the rear. Christie skirted a drifting log, stumbled, and nearly fell. Dean also stepped around the length of dark wood. Ryan was passing the sodden hunk of driftwood when it opened its gaping jaws.
Oh, shit!
On dry, firm earth, Ryan's razor-honed reflexes would have carried him clear of the attacking muddy alligator. But the beach sloped, and the tiny stones shifted and slithered under his combat boots. As he started to fall, he flew the Heckler and Koch G-12 toward Christie. Then the gigantic saurian, well over 20 feet long, clamped its overlapping teeth around his ankles and jerked him off balance.
Yeah.
Fairly early in their relationship, Jack Lauren had told Ryan all about gators. The albino teenager had been born and raised in the festering bayous of Louisiana, spending much of his time hiding out or hunting among the gnarled roots of the mangroves, the domain of the big crocodiles and alligators.
They'll grab hold, then roll you, try to drag you underwater. Once they got you in the swamp, they roll again and keep you under. They take and store you in a tunnel, like larder. You fight quick, but you finished.
There was a part of Ryan's brain that recalled that distant conversation, even while he was flailing in the freezing shingle, hands scrabbling for a grip among the whispering stones. The huge gator was doing just as Jack Lauren had said it would, rolling. If Ryan hadn't gone with it, the weight and pressure would have dislocated his knee and hip. His head splashed into the shallows, and he was deafened by the crashing of the water. Pressure pressed below both knees, but Ryan managed to kick one leg free. The alligator had incredible power, flailing him around like a toy in the hands of a maniac child. The one-eyed man struggled to hold his breath, but it was impossible. Some of the time, his head was in the cold, snowy air. Much of the time, it was beneath the freezing, bubbling river. He could hear a raging, snarling sound filling his head, but he wasn't aware that it was his own voice making the noise. Twice he managed to get his fingers on the butt of the Sig Sauer on his hip, but each time, the gator twisted him around, dashing him face down into the shingle, making him lose his grip again. Ryan's third attempt was for his panga, and this time he was lucky. The hilt was in his fingers, and he clung to it literally for dear life. But the cleaver, with its broad, heavy blade, was suited for slashing and hacking rather than thrusting. Though Ryan tried to use it, the edge simply slid off the great knobbed scales of the reptile. Battling against a shrinking supply of air, Ryan could feel his strength beginning to slip away, and he was slowly and surely being dragged toward the deeper waters offshore. As soon as the gigantic creature erupted from the dark pebbles, Christie had turned and drawn her pistol, but she saw the futility of it.
Damn it!
She quickly scrabbled for the Heckler & Koch rifle that Ryan had thrown away, but even with that in her hands, she realized she could do nothing with it. All she could see was a blurred, tangled shape, flailing and splashing in the bubbling whiteness at the edge of the water. Dean was at her side, staring intently at the fight.
It'll drag him under and drown him!
I know.
The boy at her side pulled a tiny knife from his belt, with a blade no longer than a man's forefinger.
I'll do it! I'll save him!
No, you'll only get...
But the child evaded her grab, ducking under her hand. He ran the few paces to the edge of the Hudson and jumped in. Simultaneously, the gator gave a great swirling thrust with its tail and stubby hind legs and dragged Ryan completely below the surface. There were a few bubbles, and then the dark, oily water became sullen and still. Before Ryan's head went underwater, he managed a last frantic sucking breath, filling his lungs as he was drawn inexorably under. Holding the hilt of the panga in both hands, he tried repeatedly to stab downward toward the long, clutching snout that held him fast. But he was blinded, tossed and turned, unable to work out just where the gator's eyes were. The blade jarred as it struck bone and armored hide, but there was no hint of the creature being harmed. A cold blackness began to crawl across the inside of Ryan's skull. Another of the creatures began to attack him. Ryan tried to jab the cleaver at it, feeling its claws tangling in his hair, but he was too weakened. Ryan had the impression that the clamping jaws had released his leg and that he was being heaved upward toward the air. Then his head broke the surface of the water, and a great surge of air whooshed into his strained lungs. But his hair was still locked by something that was pulling at him.
Swim, Ryan!
What?
Swim! Before any others smell blood and come in after us!
Yeah, right.
Ryan began kicking feebly, hoping that Dean was leading them in the right direction. In the midnight blackness, Ryan had totally lost touch with where the shore was. The boys still grabbed him by the shoulder, his skinny legs pumping at the water, driving them toward the band of deeper blackness behind them. Ryan suddenly felt his feet kick something, and for a moment he came close to losing control and screaming. Then he realized that it was a chunk of long-buried rubble, and that he was now in less than 4 feet of water,